listening to Old New Borrowed Blue on 2SER with your host, Joel Kassam.
Hello and welcome to Old New Borrowed Blue on 2SER 107.3. Joel Kassam is my name. I hope you're doing very well and thank you for joining me this week. If you're new to the show, this is where I invite a special guest into the studio and they take the musical reins by playing four of their favourite songs. All right, let's find out who we've got this week. My guest today is a historian, criminologist and curator at Sydney Living Museums. To fill us in a little more about Sydney's darker past and why she loves it so much, it's Nerida Campbell. Welcome, Nerida.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming in. Now, you obviously do a lot of work with the history of Sydney, but where did you grow up?
I grew up in Moss Vale, which is just outside of Sydney.
Okay, yeah, so you actually are from Sydney originally.
Yeah, sort of.
Okay, yeah, okay. The north side. So what got you into history then?
I've always had a passion for history. I spent a lot of my holidays down at my grandmother's farm and our family sort of kept a lot of stuff over the generations they'd been on that farm. So there are all these trunks just full of flapper costumes and, you know, bits of dresses and corsets going back into sort of the 1860s. And I just found that fascinating as a child.
So you mean that your family had lived on this property for...
Yeah, they...
A really long time.
Yeah, they'd bought the property back in 1862 and generation after generation just lived there. And in the school holidays, we used to go down there and have to help with things like driving the tractor while the men put the hay on the back. It wasn't totally a holiday. A bit of child labour going on there, but we loved it.
Okay, and what got you into then the crime side of history?
I really just find and have found the motivations of people, you know, the different ways that people act and behave really fascinating. As a child, my mother used to read me a totally inappropriate book about a cannibal who would send dingoes out to capture men, which she would then eat. And she used to read that to me. I loved it every day.
You loved it?
When
well,
I was 3 years old. So I'm not sure if I was made or whether it was just something deep inside me. But certainly as a child, I was interested in convicts and Australian history and more about the crime, I suppose, than the other types of history.
Okay, is this something you studied at school?
A little bit. I was the child who always did their research project on the bush ranger, or mostly, you know, the criminal women, convict women was an interest of mine.
Okay.
Yeah, I just found it fascinating.
Why do you think this side of history is so important?
I think it's important to understand the darker side of our history and to really understand us as a society, you need to understand what rules we hold, you know, to be important, what behaviours we believe to be acceptable, and how we as a society keep ourselves together and gel when we're dealing with criminality and unacceptable behaviours.
It's very interesting, and I want to talk a lot more about it. But first, we have to get into your music. Your old song, what have you gone with?
I've gone with Eartha Kitt, I Want to Be Evil.
Okay, and why have you chosen this one?
I enjoy this song, I suppose, because I'm a feminist, and there's something about that. It's not totally in line, but there's something about pushing back against society's expectations of women here.
Okay, cool. Well, this is Eartha Kitt with I Want to Be Evil.
I've posed for pictures with ivory soap. I've petted stray dogs and shied clear of dope. My smile is brilliant. My glance is tender. But I'm noted most for my unspoiled gender. I've been made Miss Rheingold, though I never catch beer. And I'm the person to whom they say, "You're sweet, my dear." The only etchings I've seen have been behind glass. And the closest I've been to a bar was at ballet class. Prim and proper. The girl who's never been cased. Well, I'm tired of being pure and not chaste. Like something that seeks its level, I wanna go to the devil, wanna be evil. I wanna spit tacks I wanna be evil and cheat at jacks. I wanna be wicked. I wanna tell lies. I wanna be mean and throw my ties. I want to wake up in the morning with that dark brown taste. I wanna see some dissipation in my face. I wanna be evil. I wanna be mad. But more than that, I wanna be bad. I wanna be evil and trump an ace just to see my partner's face. I wanna be nasty. I wanna be cruel. I wanna be daring. I wanna shoot pool. And in the theater, I want to change my seat just so I can step on everybody's feet. I wanna be evil. I wanna hurt for lies. I wanna sing songs like the guy who cries. I wanna be horrid. I wanna drink booze. And whatever I've got, I am eager to lose. I wanna be evil, little evil me, just as mean and evil as I can be.
Eartha Kitt there with I Want to Be Evil. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Old New Borough Blue, where I'm joined by Nerida Campbell. What was the first exhibition you were a part of?
First exhibition I worked on was Femme Fatale, the Female Criminal, and it was a fantastic opportunity as a young curator to actually be able to tell stories of Sydney's criminal women. Yeah. And that was at the Justice and Police Museum, which has a fantastic collection. So I was able to spend time in the collection and just bring out some really remarkable objects and stories. So I loved that.
How do you? How does it work? How do you find all these photos and archives and everything? Where do they come from?
Some of them are held by the museum collection, so it's about reinterpreting and rethinking about objects that you've got. And we've got about 10,000 objects in that collection and 130,000 glass plate and flexible negatives. So there's a huge amount of material there. But members of the public are incredibly generous, and they'll come to us with, you know, some really highly significant objects that they believe need to be in state hands, and they donate them to the museum, and then we can interpret those and share them with the public.
Do you ever, like, do you borrow from other museums? Does that work as well? And libraries and things like that?
Yeah, we do. So we seek out many things from different museums, libraries, and private lenders, so people who have collections. And it's remarkable, you know, the range of things that people collect and the kinds of things that you're able to borrow and the generosity of people. You know, they have things that are beloved and very special, and for them to loan them to the museum and share them with the public is really generous.
How far back do you go when you're going through archives and stuff?
At Justice and Police, we generally sort of go back to about 1810 is, you know, the beginning of the records that we hold.
So around 30 years since the First Fleet, does that mean that's when they started to keep records?
Oh, they started earlier. So at the Museum of Sydney, we've actually got type from the first printing press, which was brought out on the First Fleet.
You know,
they really had that idea that they were going to have to communicate in print and, you know, keep a record of what they were doing.
Yes.
And so in amongst all of the bizarre things that they brought with them, they brought this printing press, and all the little bits of type over time got washed down into the sewers and drains. And when the archaeologists dug up the side of the museum in the 1980s, they found this typeface, and it's now on display in the museum.
Yeah, what sort of bizarre things are you finding? You must find some very strange things.
We do find some strange things. So for instance, this week I've been working on a flag that was donated to us that is part of the New Guard, which was a paramilitary fascist group in the 1930s Sydney. And it's got a remarkable history, which links with, you know, the opening of the Sydney Harbour Bridge by Francis de Groot, who usurped the premier and cut the ribbon with his sword.
Yes.
And that's depicted on there, along with a Nazi salute and a bulldog and all kinds of bizarre kind of symbolism. And I get to sort of sit down and go, okay, let's see if we can make sense of this and how can we share this story. And wow, you know, Sydney wasn't as stable politically as we might assume today. There was a time when there was a very real fear that the government was going to be overthrown by the New Guard and that the premier was going to be kidnapped. You know, it takes you into a whole different world that you perhaps couldn't dream of.
Absolutely. What about weapons and stuff at that time? What sort of weapons are you coming across?
We have quite an unusual weapon collection. So at the Justice and Police Museum, we've got weapons that have been confiscated by police. And sometimes those weapons they confiscate are things that they've never seen before and they think are highly unusual. So we'll have homemade weapons, and people will put a lot of artistic endeavour into the creation of their weapons. So we have things that have been painted with fake gold and have had little symbols carved into them. We have a baton that somebody made who was obviously a St. George Dragons fan, and he'd written Saints to Win, but he misspelt Saints.
Typical Saints fan.
And so, you know, people, when they're making weapons, do create some quite unusual ones. And then there's the whole range of concealed weapons, so things that don't look like weapons but actually are.
Right.
So we have, for instance, a little Perspex ring that a teenager made, but he'd embedded a razor blade in it, so it was a pretty nasty object. But when you first look at it, it looks quite beautiful.
Oh, right. Okay. That's amazing. Our guest today is Nerida Campbell. She is choosing all the songs. What's your new song, Nerida?
It's Meg Myers' Numb.
And why have you chosen this one?
I just like songs that have some emotion to them, and I find the lyrics quite emotional. It reminds me of when I was young.
Okay. Cool. Well, that's a great choice for a new song then. This is Numb by Meg Myers.
Said and done,
Meg Myers there with Numb. You are listening to Old New Borrow Blue on 2SER. Let's talk about some of the more predominant Sydney criminals. Who can you tell us about?
I've recently been doing work on Kate Lee, and many people know Kate Lee through the sort of underbelly shows that have been on television in the past few years. But it's been really interesting to really dig down into who she was and into the records around her. And it was quite sad because, you know, she, as an 11-year-old child, was taken from her family in Dubbo. And the first ever offence on her criminal record sheet is as a neglected child. So taken from her family, put into the Parramatta Industrial School, and then, you know, things went wrong and she just continued to have more and more criminal charges. By the time we sort of focus on her during the 1920s, she's running sly grog shops throughout Surry Hills. She is the boss woman of Sydney's underworld. But it was really interesting to sort of imagine her as this 11-year-old, you know, that's the age of my son, yeah. You know, being taken away from everybody she knows and placed in a city where she knows no one and there's no one to care for her and tuck her into bed at night. So that really made me think about the role of the criminal justice system in the shaping of, you know, young people's criminality.
What are your thoughts on the justice system?
I think, you know, it's such a difficult thing to deal with young people who are struggling and who are offending. I don't think we've quite got it right. And certainly in the 1920s, when, you know, I've been doing a lot of my research, the idea was that you could sort of send kids out, get them working hard, and in some way that work would reform them. But it seems to have failed. Many of the criminals that we have in our current exhibition, Underworld, are people like Chow Hayes, Phil Jeffs. They went through that juvenile justice system and it certainly didn't reform them. Indeed, you know, people like Chow Hayes said, you know, it gave him the contacts he needed to actually build his criminal career in Sydney.
As strange as this question may sound, do you have any particular favourite criminals?
Favourite criminals?
Yeah.
At the moment, I've got one that I've been researching. It's a guy called Jack Dennison. So he's a 19-year-old guy, not a big-time criminal, but a guy with big aspirations. He's just a knuckle-headed teenager. He was breaking into tool shops in just one street in the city, and he would break in there, steal tools, pawn them, get the money. But he styled himself the Apache, and he used to leave little notes for people saying, "Oh, gee, your safe is good. This better than what I've seen in the grand old USA." Signed, the Apache. It's like, you're just a knucklehead kid from Fairfield. I'm not a particularly successful criminal, but I just love the fact that he'd embraced this idea of the Parisian Apache, a dangerous, daring criminal.
He was obviously caught then.
Yeah, he was caught. He broke into the same place three times. He wasn't a criminal mastermind, but he'd obviously been reading a lot of true crime comics and watching a lot of American movies. And, yeah, I like him because he dreamed big.
Yeah, yeah. How does crime of the past differ from crime of today?
Often it doesn't differ at all.
Okay.
You know, there are some crimes that just continue. You know, people will take advantage of the gullible and the greedy. People will treat other people badly. But we do also see that there are some crimes that fall in and out of favour. So certainly, you know, from the 20s through to the 1960s, safe breaking was something that took up a lot of police time. We don't hear about it very much anymore.
Yeah.
And indeed, when we have school children coming in, sometimes you've got to explain the idea of the safe because they don't really understand. They understand a jewellery safe, but why would people be keeping large sums of money in a steel box somewhere? Why wouldn't they put it in the bank?
Yeah.
So, well, the bank wasn't open on Sundays. It's not the way it was back in those days. So even just that concept can be quite slippery for some of the students who come into the museum.
We have to get into your borrowed song now. What have you gone with?
I have gone with Macklemore, Same Love.
Yeah, why have you chosen this song?
Borrowed this from my son, my 8-year-old. He suggested this to me and he became absolutely enraptured with this song. You know, he knows about, you know, equal love and about treating people of all kinds of sexualities and race equally. But when he saw this at the NRL Grand Final, because he loves to play rugby league, he was just overcome with the fact that his sport was embracing Macklemore's song, and he found that incredibly inspiring. So he said to me, "That's your song, Mum."
Oh, that's great. The future generations are looking up, I think. This is Macklemore with Same Love.
When I was in the third grade, I thought that I was gay, cause I could draw. My uncle was, and I kept my room straight. I told my mom, tears rushing down my face. She's like, "Ben, you've loved girls since before pre-K." Tripping. Yeah, I guess she had a point, didn't she? Bunch of stereotypes all in my head. I remember doing the math, like, yeah, I'm good at Little League. A preconceived idea of what it all meant for those that like the same sex, had the characteristics. The right-wing conservatives think it's a decision, and you can be cured with some treatment and religion. Man-made rewiring of a predisposition, playing God. Oh nah, here we go. America the brave still fears what we don't know. God loves all his children, is somehow forgotten, but we paraphrase a book written 3,500 years ago.
Bye-bye,
I don't know.
Bye-bye. And I can't change. Bye-bye. Even if I tried, even if I wanted to. And I can't change. Even if I tried, even if
I was gay, I would think hip-hop hates me. Have you read the YouTube comments lately? Man, that's gay, gets dropped on the daily. We become so numb to what we're saying. A culture founded from oppression. Yeah, we don't have acceptance for 'em. Call each other faggots behind the keys of a message board. A word rooted in hate, yet our genre still ignores it. Gay is synonymous with the lesser. It's the same hate that's caused wars from religion, gender to skin color, the complexion of your pigment. The same fight that led people to walkouts and sit-ins. It's human rights for everybody. There is no difference. Live on and be yourself. When I was at church, they taught me something else. If you preach hate at the service, those words aren't anointed. That holy water that you soak in has been poisoned. When everyone else is more comfortable remaining voiceless rather than fighting for humans that have had their rights stolen. I might not be the same, but that's not important. No freedom till we're equal. Damn right I support it. Play, don't press pause. Progress march on with the veil over our eyes. We turn our back on the cause till the day that my uncles can be united by law. When kids aren't walking around the hallway plagued by pain in their heart, a world so hateful some would rather die than be who they are. And a certificate on paper isn't gonna solve it all, but it's a damn good place to start. No law is gonna change us. We have to change us. Whatever God you believe in, we come from the same one. Strip away the fear, underneath it's all the same love. About time that we raised up.
And I can't change. Even if I tried, even if I wanted to. And I can't change. Even if I tried, even if I wanted to. My love, she keeps me warm. She keeps me warm. She keeps me warm.
That's Same Love by Macklemore there. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Old New Borrow Blue on 2SER, where my guest today is Nerida Campbell. Now, you are currently showing the Underworld exhibition at the Justice and Police Museum. How's all that going?
Going really well. It's on till early August at the Museum of Sydney, and it's a collection of mugshots from the 1920s, but they're not the mugshots that you expect. It's not the front and side passport photo type thing. They're just infused with the sitter's personality. People could pose as they wanted to. Right. You know, people would put their legs up on chairs. Others would stare down the barrel of the camera and try to intimidate the police officer taking their photo. Some people are in tears. Some people are smirking, laughing, smoking. It's really an interesting kind of snapshot of the time and, you know, the fashion and you know, the kinds of offences that people are involved in. So all of the people are suspects. So a lot of them, you know, they haven't had their day in court. So, you know, they're quite confident. There's a bit of bravado. Groups of teenage boys all kind of joshing and laughing and having a good time.
They would put groups together.
They would put groups together, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, at that time, like all of the things that we think we know about a mugshot, like you don't let people get together and get their story straight. No, no, it's fine. Let's just take a photo of them all together as they are. So, yeah, it's a really interesting collection, and it's the first time that we've shown this number of those mugshots.
Very,
called specials.
Very cool. And that runs till August, you said?
Yes.
Excellent. You've also written a book.
I've written a book, Underworld, which looks at that special collection, but also Sydney during the 1920s and the kinds of things that were happening. So, you know, we see the rise of cocaine, we see the mafia arrive in Sydney during that period, and we also see some really odd things around opium and opium smoking going on there, where the police began targeting opium because the League of Nations felt that it was very evil and needed to be stamped out. The recreational smoking of opium. And we see these mugshots of elderly Chinese men who don't look as though they've become pensioners and gone rogue. They've probably been smoking opium all their life, but they're pulled out and their first offence on the criminal record is, you know, well, they're in their 70s.
Yeah, wow.
But the police have got their kind of result. They can report back to the government that we've arrested, you know, 40 opium smokers, and they can report that back to the League of Nations that they're cleaning up the opium problem in Sydney.
That's incredible. Yeah. Is that sort of around the same time as, like, Prohibition?
Yeah, so in America they've got Prohibition. Here we have rules around the sale of alcohol. You can't buy alcohol after 6 o'clock from 1916 onwards unless you went to one of Lee's Sly Grog Shops in Surry Hills, where it was expensive but freely available.
Nerida Campbell, thank you so much for coming in today. It's been an absolute pleasure. People have to go to the Justice and Police Museum. Go check out the Underworld exhibition that's currently showing. I'm going to be down there. And now it's time for you to take us out with your blues song.
Yeah, my blues song is What the Moon Saw. So it's a song that I always find, again, you know, really emotive and interesting lyrics. There's some fairly strange lyrics in it. And it was one of those first albums that I discovered, I suppose, as a teenager that I just, you know, fell in love with and played all the time, much to my parents' annoyance.
Excellent. Thank you so much for coming in.
Your beats mid crack of a face really wouldn't look out of place in a garden of ruins, sorrows and tombs. Your Judas tree, oh, how it blooms tonight. Your conscience must be jerry-built. You cut me up without any guilt. Oh, I played the farmer who'd just come to town. The moon must have cringed when it looked down. What it saw on the floor, lashed fatal floor. One moment of lust shadowed my trust. I refused to believe it. I saw with my eyes. Still can't believe what you said was all lies. But now I know the moon told me so. Said the soldiers to say that. My stay at home.